All right. This is the Happy House Hunters group. This is our little mastermind call. So we're going to talk about all things real estate investing. So share, please share. Again, this is just for the mastermind group. This is not out there for the public. So don't use any names though, but so what's going on? What can we chat about today?
Well, you can tell us what you want to start with, but we're in the process of purchasing a new property and we have an update on our tenant issues with the boyfriend, girlfriend.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the new property first. What are you looking at and how did you, what was the process for the mastermind folks, you know, that are, because you guys are a little ahead of some of the beginners now. So because you've got some under your belt. So what was your process in buying this property?
So this was actually an MLS property.
Okay.
And it is a small, we call it a 3-1. So a 3-bedroom, 1-bath.
Okay.
It's
in Lancaster.
Yeah, in Lancaster. The asking price.
That's actually one of my favorite places to invest because the property taxes are so good there. Compare. Well,
Michelle, we're talking about our property that we're buying.
Cool.
So the asking price was $129. Okay. Cute little house and pictures on the MLS. Obviously, it was going to need some cosmetic work. But we got out there. It does have a brand new roof. New siding, some other updates, new kitchen cabinets and counters and appliances that'll all stay. But then there are some very obvious deficiencies in the work that was done.
Well, and you know what? That could be any property you buy, you know? Yeah. So what kind of a rehab are you looking to get those deficiencies taken care of?
I'd love for it to cost 20. We'll keep it under 40. But in looking at what all it needed, what we'd be able to rent it for, we offered 89. So well under the 129 that she was asking, but just, like I said, knowing what was gonna need to go into it before we'd even be able to put a tenant in there, that was really our highest and best. That she countered 100 and we said, sorry, we're already at the top of where we can go. So a week went by, we heard nothing at all. And then recently got a text from Mr. Brandon saying, hey, she's ready to move north and accept the 89. Are you still interested? So,
wow. We've picked up a couple like that. That, you know, we actually, you know, bid and we're thinking there's no way we're going to get that. And we did. So, yep, I get it. So that's good news. So you're now in contract.
Well, let me just expand a little bit on what you said. Cause yeah, we had that discussion. Maybe we should just wait and see if it stays on the market for 30 days before offering something so low. And in the end, we decided, well, you know, if we do that, somebody else might offer a low bid and get accepted. So we might as well put our offer in there. The worst that happens is she says no. So yeah, don't be afraid to make the offer. And we actually try to force that upon ourselves by saying, if we tour a house, then we have to put in an offer on the house.
Oh, so, oh, now, yeah. Michelle's like, oh yeah, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that makes you do your homework and you do diligence, which it's good to practice that no matter what.
Right. And
then sometimes it pushes you outside of your comfort zone with an offer that you really don't want to make.
So now how did you put together your rehab costs? Do you have an estimator that you're using, like off of Bigger Pockets or the one that we've got on the Resource Center? Or what are you using to estimate your rehab?
So I do have, it's actually a book from Bigger Pockets that goes through the different, all kinds of different things you might need to do in a rehab and give some estimated costs for those things. But I'll tell you, prices are so all over the map right now.
I know.
A lot of it, I feel like, is just throwing a dart at a board, because, you know, that 2x4 that should be $2 is now 12 or whatnot. And the next day it's $3. It just, I don't know what it's going to cost.
Well, and that's if you can even find the stuff that you're looking for. I mean, half the time you can't even find it. You know, we've gone into, you know, I mean, just the other day, you know, you knew that I got the midterm rental, that condo there in, you know, Whitehall, Reynoldsburg area. And we decided we wanted to put a keyless entry lock on the door because the girl is moving on that's there now. Her assignment is ending because it's a midterm. She's a traveling nurse. We have another traveling nurse coming in, and that transition is going to happen while I'm here in Florida. And so we said, well, we're going to put the keyless entry on there. We have it on most of our properties anyway. And that way we just code in an owner's code and a maintenance code, and then the tenant gets their own code. And I can then just program every time I have a new tenant, I can take the old tenant's code out and put the new one in. And I don't have to worry about keys floating around out there. And so we go, since it's there, you know, right up 33, right on College Avenue. I mean, you know, right up that direction. Anyway, as we're putting it all together, we run over to Lowe's, and they first of all, when we went to Lowe's, they didn't hardly have anything on the shelf in keyless entry locks. So we go over to Home Depot. So we go into Home Depot, and they had 3 of the pewter that we wanted to match the doorknob. And the first one, we took it over, and Mark worked and worked and worked and could not get that. And he goes, I'm an airplane mechanic. You'd think I could put a darn lock on a door, and could not get the connectors to connect, you know, from this side of the door and this side to connect, so that when you put in the code, it would run the motor to lock and unlock the door. So finally he goes, I think there's something wrong. He said, so let's just take it back and exchange it. So we go exchange it. So now we've got this second lock. We take it over. He said, I think this one's not been opened. He goes, I think that first one maybe had been opened and been returned. We take the second one over. He doesn't look like it's been opened. He opens it up. Where all the batteries go is all corroded, like it had either been sitting in a wet warehouse or it was all green corrosion. Where the batteries go. Third try, we take it back. Now there's a manager there. Mark says, I'm trying this one right here at the store. I'm not leaving the store until I know I've got one that's going to work. He takes it out of the box, could not get it to work. There's no directions at all in any of these boxes on what the master code is to put in so that you can program your codes in. There's nothing.
Hmm.
What would you guess the master code to be?
0000.
Well, finally, yeah, we tried that, and that did work on that one. And that one did connect, and that one, you know, did work out. And so he finally... We got it. And finally the next day he said, I'm done messing with it today. And the next day he finally went up and put it on the door. But it was like, that was not supposed to be that hard.
Yeah.
No.
And we ended up with a black one because none of the pewter ones, they'd all been opened and looked like returned.
I ran into problems just buying cinder blocks. So for some work I'm doing on our own house, where they filled in a one bay, one car garage door to turn it into a room. They put the studs just all the way down to the ground, and water was starting to seep underneath. So I'm putting just a course of cinder blocks and then building up on top of that. But yeah, I went to our Home Depot. I wanted the solid cap blocks, just the four, right. And they didn't have any. I had to drive down to Lowe's to find some of those. And even Lowe's just had like half a pallet left.
Wow. Well, we're finding that every time we try to buy something, it's just been such a struggle. So in the resources, and Michelle, thank you for sending over a couple of folks to add to our resource center. Mm-hmm. And anyway, those are all added. And there is an appliance. I added this and I haven't used them, but I added them into the resource center, and it's a whole appliance store, international. And they will actually ship you whatever appliances. Now I haven't really explored deep down to find out pricing and whether they had everything in stock, but the letter that I received said that they had in stock where our local lumber stores wouldn't have. And I had a terrible time finding a dishwasher here a few weeks back. No one had a white dishwasher. And then I needed a white refrigerator in one of my units where the refrigerator went bad. Couldn't find one. Finally, I bought a stainless steel floor model just to get this couple a refrigerator. And then it came with a big dent in the door. And I said, you know, I don't have time to mess with it. Just leave it. I'll take it. I'll worry about it when the tenant moves and we do another flip. But how frustrating to buy a brand new refrigerator and there's already a dent in the door. You know, and the guy's like, well, we could take it back, but it's going to be 10 weeks before we get another one in, get it in. And so it was like, what do you do? So anyhow, I did save that appliance person and I put it in our resource center. I haven't tried them. So on one hand, I'm anxious to give them a try. But on the other hand, I don't want to have a unit that needs an appliance right now. So I'll cross my fingers that I don't have to use them right away. But anyway. I will try them the very next time I need to, I'll try them.
You know what? So, Joe and I just went into contract on a rental also.
And congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. But we got the lease and the lease states that the refrigerator and stove are provided by the tenant. I was like, well, that's awesome. We don't have to replace those.
Well, yeah, that's a good thing. But then once that tenant leaves, are you going to provide them, do you think?
I think it's a good idea to not. I don't know.
I agree. On one hand, I agree with that. On the other hand, they do tear up your floor, pulling them in and out. Because most tenants don't really know how to move appliances because they don't do that for a living, of course. And if you've got a vinyl floor or some sort of a floor that can scar easily. A lot of times they tear up your floor. And then you end up having to put down a new floor before your next tenant can move in. And then you hope they don't tear it up, dragging their stuff in.
That's true.
Interesting.
So that's just something to think about. Yeah.
Have you ever rented like that where the client or the tenant needs to provide appliances? I'm wondering, does it make it hard to find a tenant? Because
it makes it harder because a lot of times if depends on the level of the unit. If the higher price the unit, a lot of times you have tenants that they've got their favorite refrigerator already purchased and that's not a problem. Or they definitely want a gas, you know, kitchen range. They don't like electric because they're quite the master chef or whatever. Okay. But when you get to a certain price point, a lot of those folks, they're scraping together the funds to get moved and having to go out and buy a refrigerator and a stove sometimes just would knock yours off their list. They're like, we don't have the extra, you know, $1,000 to do that too, because again, the price of the appliances are up and finding them are up, you know, even for now, if a tenant already has one, and they go, can I use my own appliances? That's why it's kind of important to have some storage. Do you guys all have a place to do storage? We do because of Mark's airplanes and the hangars and, of course, our garage that's full of salon equipment. But but we do have a place. So if we had a tenant that said, hey, can I use my own? We simply can put the ones we have in storage because we know with the number of doors that we have at some point, somebody's going to need a new stove or a new refrigerator. And then it's like, hey, we have one already. We don't have to go try to find one. And so with that in mind, all my rentals have white so that they are interchangeable. And all of my refrigerators are kind of at a standard size, not too big, not great big ones. That way they'll even fit in the smaller units. And I do that on purpose so that my stoves and refrigerators are all interchangeable. And I like all electric stoves. I don't like the gas, you know, in case a pilot light goes out and then they don't realize the burner's turned on. So I don't even like gas hot water tanks. I like electric. So if the house came with a gas one, we'll go with that because again, I'm a firm believer to not replace it if it's not broken. So, but if we have to replace it, I switch it over to electric.
Yeah.
And get rid of all. I do have gas furnaces, but but all my hot water tanks I'm switching over. Because generally, if an electric hot water tank goes out, 9 times out of 10, it's an element, and that's a whole lot easier fix than a whole hot water tank or a whole gas assembly.
Yeah, ideally, I would change all of our units over to all electric. I'd even do the furnace. You pretty much eliminate all maintenance except filter with an electric furnace. There's nothing for nothing to service every year.
I get that. But the downside of that is that oftentimes their utility bill is a lot higher than they anticipated because they were used to gas, which is less expensive to heat with. And then they decide to move on because they can't afford the utilities there. So I did keep my gas furnaces. Now, if it comes with electric, I leave electric in there, but you know, and hopefully it's insulated enough that it keeps their utility bill down. But I usually will stay with the gas furnace if there's one there. And again, because it's expensive to switch. But I, like you, I am trading out all the hot water heaters over to electric as needed. Well, I don't replace them if they're still working.
This is the plan. It has not been executed yet.
Okay, so you've calculated the rehab. And so you were saying, as Michelle was signing on, that you're hoping for around 20, but not over 40.
Yes.
Okay. Now, again, help us out here with, and again, we're always on this call with the mastermind, we're always talking about finances. Is this cash reserve that you have to do this rehab, or do you have to borrow money to do the rehab? And are you borrowing to buy the house?
We are borrowing to buy the house. It will be our first time using a private money lender.
Okay.
As you know, we've been private money lenders, but we've never been private money borrowers. So
okay,
we have first go with that. And then as far as rehab goes, we will probably also secure some private funds on that we might lean more heavily on some family just to help bridge a gap there. So,
okay. So you have a plan already on how you're going to put this together and make it all happen. And you're in contract. So at this point now, you're just waiting for a closing date to get started.
We're almost in contract. The contract we submitted at the 89 has expired. So we need to talk to Kyle about getting another one that people can sign to make it official. So at this point, we have a gentleman's agreement on it.
Okay. Are you getting the static when I talk, or can I hear? Do you hear that static, or is it just me on my end?
I don't hear any static.
Yeah, it sounds good here.
Okay, it must be just on my end. I've got a brand new computer because my other one wouldn't let me share screen and do all of that because I have it so filled up. Anyhow, I have a brand new computer, and I'm using a virtual backdrop. I'm in Florida. I'm sitting in the bedroom of my little tiny condo, and this is a virtual backdrop of a coffee shop. So anyway,
that's very nice.
It works. I just have this thing that when I'm on a Zoom call, I don't like to see that somebody's sitting in their bedroom. It's just my own little pet peeve. You know, a lot of folks are in their bedroom, which is okay. I don't mind, but I don't want me to be sitting in the bedroom when I'm doing a Zoom call. And so, so I thought I'd try a virtual screen. The only thing is you have to have a green screen behind you. And so I just ordered, off of Amazon. There's a whole bracket that it goes on, and it's just a green piece of cloth. Well, because we're traveling and we travel really, really light with just a personal item, I just brought the cloth. I didn't bring the whole, you know, setup. And so I have a little folding screen that I use back in Canal, and I have a little folding screen here. And so I just took clothespins and clipped it on the folding screen to put the green screen behind me. So that's just to give you guys a back view if you guys are there it is. Can you see it?
Yes.
Yep. So that's all I did anyway.
So yeah, you can kind of tell it's a backdrop.
When I move around it, but the green screen helps a lot. Without the green screen, it really makes it blurry.
Yeah, I was thinking you don't have pieces of you disappearing randomly, so it's
right,
better than
right.
most virtual backdrops.
Well, and that's because they don't have a green screen behind them.
Right.
Yeah, you have to have that green material behind you. On Zoom, it can be green or blue. If any of you decide you want to do a virtual backdrop, it has to be green or blue behind you to hide whatever's in your room. So anyway, so we'll see how that works. I've got a little lanai here at my condo, and there is a solid wall. So I thought of just taking the green and thumbtacking it on the solid wall behind me. It's got beadboard on it, so I could just thumbtack right to the beadboard, and then my green screen would be up, and I wouldn't have to put it up and take it up and down. So anyway, it's all good. All right. So Michelle, tell us about what you're in contract for, and then we'll circle back around to Tammy and David about their tenant issues.
Okay. I also have a question about a tenant. So we're in contract on 4411 Allen Drive in Whitehall.
Okay.
We actually know the guy selling it. We didn't know that until he signed the papers for our offer. But Joe messaged him on Facebook and told him that we were putting in the offer so that he would choose us, because we haven't won any of the offers we've put out. But we offered just for asking price and got it. And we had the inspection, and there was just minor things that we're going to ask to get repaired.
Okay.
And there's a tenant in there paying $1,429, I think, from Section 8. And she wants to stay. Her lease is up in August, but she wants to stay. So it's exciting.
So this is going to be an easy one for you if it's just minor things that you have to do. And the fact that there's a tenant living there tells you that everything is working. I mean, you know, and again, it's always the stuff that you can't see that you have to kind of plan for. We've bought several out of foreclosure. And if you're out in the country and you buy a foreclosure and it's on a well and septic and everything's shut off, you don't know if the well and septic is any good.
Right.
So you have to calculate that into your offer, thinking, you know, if I get this, what if I have to drill a new well? What if I have to empty the septic? What if I have to put in a new septic? What if? And even in town, and I know we've been talking about this for some time, even when you're in one of the cities, those sewer issues are expensive.
Yeah.
And so if somebody's living there and they're not complaining, and, you know, and they're showering and doing laundry and flushing the commode, you know, at this point that obviously you don't have any major issues.
Right.
When it comes, because there's somebody already living there. So that's kind of a good sign.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking too. After you said that, when we did our last boots on the ground, I was like, well, maybe it is a good thing that there's tenants there sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it shows you that, and especially with as hot as it is, if there's central air, obviously the air is working. And in the wintertime, you know, the furnace is working. So and the hot water tank is working. So you know that all of those major mechanicals are working. Now, again, one can stop at any time, but you're not walking into a place where you know all of that has to be replaced.
Right.
So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. When we take all the expenses out, we will cash flow about $250 a month.
Okay. So that's the mortgage, the taxes, and the insurance, and whatever you need to do for rehab.
We don't need to do any for rehab. It's fixed up. Yeah, thank goodness.
Okay.
I like buying turnkey. But it's taking like 3% repairs, 3% capital expenditures, 3% vacancy. Yeah, taking that into account.
So it's your whole, it's your entire calculation. And so you're cash flowing as soon as you sign. So again, the lesson in this one is that you make money at the beginning of the deal.
Yeah.
And so you're making money at the beginning of the deal, because not only is it going to be worth more than what you're paying rather quickly, so you're going to gain equity, if not already. I don't know if you've calculated what, you know, are you underpaying for this property, or are you paying market?
We're paying markets, but rental market, like a tenant filled rental market price. Like if it was a flip and there was nobody in there and it was somebody getting ready to move, it would probably be $20,000 more.
Because you would do some top end stuff and put it way at the top of the market,
just because of what people pay. I guess when it's already an investment, and there's people living in it for tenants, it's worth less from what we were seeing in the comparisons.
That makes some sense, especially if there's an active lease, because if there's an active lease, you can't kick them out until the lease is up. So if you're looking for your own house,
and you can't raise the and you can't raise the rent until the lease is up.
Yeah,
that's right.
Thankfully, he's already charging top dollar for rent. So yeah, that's good. So if the bank does their analysis based on, you know, if someone's going to move in there, it would be worth $20,000 more. So there will be equity built in a way.
Oh, okay. So you're making money on the equity. You're cash flowing the rent already, and then you'll have some great tax deductions at the other end. So
yeah,
with rental income instead of earned income. So that's a win-win-win for you guys.
I think so. Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah,
good to know.
Real quick though. So our property in Reynoldsburg, we should have raised the rent more, because this lady's kind of high maintenance. She asks for minor fixes. And one of the fixes that she's asking for is, I want to know what you do in this case. One, it's kind of a multi-parter. One, do you put window treatments on your windows? And two, we did. We put these roller blinds on, and apparently they are not working anymore. They're falling and breaking her things, she says. Is that something you would then replace?
Well, first of all, the window treatments that I include on all of mine, because if I don't provide them, sometimes the tenant, depending on what their budget is, they'll start putting, you know, the bed sheet or the Ohio State blanket or something over the windows, because they haven't either saved up or gone to the store, you know, and then you know how it is. Right. They get busy and, you know, and they're whatever. And next thing you know, it's been a year and the blanket's still over the window. So I put the little white mini blinds in all my windows. And here's the process. And again, all of this is in the mastermind site. It's in that whole resource center of the Happy House Hunters Mastermind. Okay. I have a walkthrough checklist. And so when a tenant moves in, we go through the checklist and we mark off that the refrigerator is okay, that the trim is okay, the doors are all working, the windows are okay, all the mini blinds are okay. They're not broken or bent or whatever. And I buy the $4 ones. I don't spend a lot of money, because, you know, you do have to replace from time to time. And a whole house of blinds can be pretty expensive if you, you know, if you buy the top of the line. So I buy the little mini blinds, and I have them where they're inset back in just to cover the glass. That way they can hang whatever curtain they want, or that Ohio State blanket if they want. They can do whatever they want. And from the outside of the house, it's all white on all the windows. And so it makes all of your properties look better. And then when I drive around, because I do a follow-up, and then I've got my maintenance, which it happens to be Matt, my son-in-law, he goes in twice a year and does like filter changes and battery changes in the smoke detectors. But while he's there, his job is to take a look around, and he'll come back and he sends me a report, then just a little checklist on each property that, you know, the filters were done, the batteries were done. And then he'll check mark the blinds need attention, you know, housekeeping needs attention, whatever that he feels could be an issue. And again, I'm not grading them on how they keep house. I really couldn't care. I'm just interested in the outside appearance, because you want to be a good neighbor. You don't want the neighbors to go, oh, that house, you know, so you want to be a good neighbor. So the outside appearance is important. And Matt will report, you know, they've got some stuff in the back that needs to be hauled away or whatever. And then that's my red flag to maybe drive by and take a look and see exactly what he was seeing. And if the blinds are kind of busted up in the windows, you know, sometimes they get broken or whatever, I just send them an Inago message. Everything's through Inago. And I'll just say it has been brought to our attention that the window coverings, you know, need replaced. And it's at their expense. And all of that is right in that original lease. And with the walkthrough that everything was in good shape and that they'll keep it in good shape. And then I just tell them right then, you know, if one of the blinds break, they're $4 to $6, under 10 bucks for a blind, just replace it. And if they get this, and I buy all of mine at Lowe's, if they get the same brand, it'll go in the same bracket. They don't even have to change the bracket generally. And at that point, then on their move out, I have a price list of what everything costs to replace. And I'm charging $25 to replace one of those mini blinds, because again, I would have to call Matt. And by the time he drives his truck, measures the window, goes over to the store, maybe a couple, three stores before he finally finds the right size, drives back over. He has to wait till, you know, either they'll let it, you know how it goes. So next thing you know, it's not a 10 minute job. And I want it enough to cover his cost, but I also want it to be a little bit punitive on their part, so that they're like, oh, I think I'll just go replace this because Kathy's going to bill me $25 for a $10 blind. And then that way, if they call me in the middle of their lease and say, my blinds are broken, I can say, okay, well, you can either replace them or I can replace them, but it's 25 bucks a window. What do you want to do here? You know, anyhow, all of that's right in my lease, because that's one of the things I provide. Now, is this a gal that when you got the lease, she was already there, or is this one a gal you put in there?
Yeah, we put her in there. So I have to just see what the lease says about it.
Okay. Now, yeah. Are you using Inago?
No.
I would recommend that you use Inago for two reasons. Number one is Inago becomes your management company, because it says Inago management right on the emails. So Inago becomes your management company. And what it does, it's a software for us, but to the tenant, it makes you look bigger than you are. It makes you look like you've got this team behind you. And okay. Then whenever I send a message through Inago, it's an email. Whenever I send that out through Inago, remember back in the olden days, you would do a carbon copy. Am I dating myself? Does everybody remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. We just call it carbon copy.
We just call it CC now.
Yeah. So anyhow, I always CC Kathy Bitter Company's advisory board and the Vinton County National Bank, which is holding my portfolio. And so that makes the tenant feel like, oh my gosh, this is a team between Kathy Bitter Companies and advisory board and the bank. And so it isn't me just being me, because that's how tenants have a tendency to think. If you're just the mom and pop, and Tammy and David, you're in the worst position because they're right behind you and they see you. You're living on the same plot of ground. So they see you and you're just people to them, you know, you're just like they are. And so when you tell them no, they think, or they could have a tendency to think that you're just being mean. They don't like me. They like you, but they don't like me because I asked them and they said no. And so what happens is that if you always want to be the good cop, your advisory board and that whole management is the bad cop. So no matter what any of my tenants ask me, I always say yes. I always say yes, but. So I'll say, I think that's a wonderful idea, but let me check with the advisory board and make sure I can do that. And then I can send a note out through Inago from the advisory board that says, it has been brought to our attention. And I don't say Kathy said, or Susie said, or Tammy said, or what. I just say, it has been brought to our attention that your blinds are not working and that they possibly need replaced. And since this is a tenant responsibility, again, depending on what your lease says, that you can feel free to replace those at your cost, or we can replace those at $25 a window. So it depends on what your lease says at this point. Mine says I can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. So you'll have
hopefully
to go back
mine does
see.
Too. Hopefully mine does too.
But again, and it depends on how it's worded. And whenever you have a situation like that where it's a gray area, your lease might say something to that effect, but not specifically. So they might read it one way and you can maybe say it says this, and they might say, well, that's not exactly what that says. Then you can actually maybe come up with a compromise. And I did this with some carpet. So a gal moved in and I knew she had dogs, and the gal ahead of her, I have to give you a hint of the backstory. The gal ahead of her had dogs and wasn't supposed to have dogs. And so there was a little bit of damage. Mark put a wider threshold on a couple of the doors where the dogs kind of, you know, dug at the edge of the carpet and covered it up, but we did not replace the carpet. Well, then this gal that's there now, she was desperate for a place. Long story short, was staying with her husband's grandmother. The grandmother passed away. And of course, the home didn't go to them. So they had to find a place like in 2 weeks. And so we had just bought this house, and then the gal left with the dogs. And so then Mark says, well, you know what? People already had dogs in there. And if this couple has dogs, we didn't replace the carpet. If we're going to replace the carpet anyway, at some point, what does it hurt? So we told her she could go ahead and move in. She did with her dogs. Well, now she's like, my dogs are really kind of messed up your carpet. And I'm like, yeah, you think? That's why we didn't put new carpet in there for you. But okay. She says, I'd like to have new carpet. And I'm like, I'd like you to not have dogs, but how, you know, what's the likelihood of that? So I thought, you know what? I had to, the advisory board gives you a moment to think. So I said, you know, that sounds like a great idea to get new carpet, but let me check with the advisory board. So that gave me some time to think. And she was like, okay, let me know. So now I'm not having to answer right then in front of her. Because my first reaction would be like, hell no, I'm not buying you new carpet with four dogs in your house. I don't think so. And the reason she wanted new carpet was because of her dogs messing up the carpet. Yeah, that's a selling point, right? So anyway, I went back to my office. I thought about it for a minute. I thought she's a good payer. You know, she always does the right thing. Her husband's kind of handy. So there's a lot of little maintenance things that I normally would have been called on that he just takes care of. So I thought, what can I do for her and still make it fair to me? What would be a win-win in this situation? So she had already found carpet for $2,000 is what she said. She'd already picked out the carpet. She'd already priced it. So the advisory board decided, and I do have an advisory board, and I did check. I have a real estate girlfriend on the advisory board. And on my advisory board. So she and I had a conversation. And so here was the decision, is that we would pay 50%. We would pay $1,000, and then she could buy, the cheapest was 2,000. The most expensive was like 2,900. And so the answer that I did through Inago on a message was that the advisory board decided that we would provide the first $1,000, and then she could get whatever carpet she wanted, and she could spend the minimum or spend as much as she wanted, but we would provide $1,000 toward her carpet. And I sent her that. She was thrilled. She called back. She goes, thank you so much. You're the best landlord. I can't believe you got that for me. And so I said, well, just tell me your carpet company. So she did. I called them up and said, we're paying the first $1,000. She's paying the difference. And they said, fine. I gave them the credit card and they sent me a receipt for $1,000. She decided to go with the higher grade carpet for $29, and she ended up paying the difference. Now, number one, she's going to take better care of that carpet because she now has some skin in the game. It's not just, we gave her new carpet and now she starts all over with, because it didn't cost her anything, you know, so let the dogs do whatever. So now she's going to take better care of it because she's got some skin in the game. And so what you might do, Michelle, is you might come back with some sort of a note from your advisory board, or, you know, however you want to do that, and let her know that the blinds that need replaced would be at her cost, but that you would contribute a certain dollar amount toward that, but not the full amount. Make it kind of her deal. Okay, you're on mute, Michelle. Okay, there you go.
That's good. She knows about our advisory board because we use that when talking to her about a plumber. There's been an issue with the plumbing, and we couldn't get the plumber we wanted out until July. It's not an emergency issue. Okay. And she said, well, I have a friend that is a plumber and he can do it. And we're like, our advisory board said we cannot hire someone that you are connected to.
Okay. So she's already familiar with the advisory board thing. Yeah. Okay. Now, do you have a website for your company?
I think I let it expire.
Okay.
So I'll just have to redo it.
Well, now I'm going to give you a, let's see what, I don't know what might work as well. Because you have to have links. Linktree is one of my favorite things. And you can put whatever you want on your Linktree. And, but it has to link out. All it is it's a link. It's basically a one page site with links on it. You can dress it up, but it, so it's a great tool, but you have to link to something. And yeah. So I don't know if you can link to a PDF. That's what I don't know, because I think I'm linking all of mine to URLs, which is an actual site. I don't know if you can link to a P, because you could create some PDFs and then link back to those. Anyway, try to make it as easy as possible, but I would recommend to move yourself up into that professional realm by creating a name for your company. And even if it's a sole proprietorship, mine's a sole proprietor, mine's just under Kathy Benner Companies, and create, even if it's a 3-page website, they're very inexpensive. Mine's on Vistaprint, and mine has my homepage. Then it has my work with me or about me page, and then my contact page. And then you can expand it depending on how much you want to pay. But if you just had that much, you could put your stuff all on your homepage if you just had a 3-page website. And those are very inexpensive. Yeah. I think HostGator right now for websites is like $3 and something a month, and it includes the domain name.
Mm. Yeah, we have I've built multiple websites.
Okay, so you know all about that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But we have a HostGator package where we can have multiple domains feeding off the same like storage. So I would have to do is buy a domain name.
Okay.
And we might even still have it. I just let the, yeah.
Okay. But anyway, if you do that and then set yourself up, because your tenants will look, they'll check you out. And if you have that where they see that you do have, you know, the advisory board, I've got my rents listed there. I've got my properties listed there. I have all of it listed there. Have you guys all looked at my website by chance? Has anybody not looked at it? Have you looked at it?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've seen the Kathy Benner Companies one, the one with the properties on it.
Okay. Yeah, when we were looking for property in Lancaster, I looked at your rents, what you're charging. Yeah.
Okay. And so know that your tenants will check you out. And so what it does is it just gives them the feeling that you're a bigger company. They don't call up, you know, their car loan and go, is it okay if we pay late this month? They already know it's not going to be okay. They already know they're going to get a late fee. They already know that if they don't pay it, there's going to be consequences. They don't call up their car mortgage or, you know, their bank and ask if they can pay late. You know, they don't do that. They don't call up and go, I ripped my seat. Are you going to replace it for me? They don't do yeah, that because they're like. The one that ripped, you know, because they know that this big company is going to go, no, we're not doing that for you. No, it's yours.
Yeah.
So set yourself up as the professional and create that persona around how you want your clients to see you. And then I encourage you to get all of your rental income, because the more properties you get, the more confusing that's going to be. Try to get it all on one system. Because right now, see, I can just click into my Inago and it tells me who's been invoiced, how much is paid on each invoice. I don't have to worry about if somebody's behind or ahead. I've got one girl that she gets all these bonuses. So she started paying ahead. And boy, after a while, you get confused. You're like, now what month was this for? Whereas in Inago, she has to pay a specific invoice number. So I know exactly what invoice she's paid for.
Mm. And yeah, that's good.
And now that I'm doing midterm rental, I even have a weekly rate in there for my midterm, and it's a beautiful thing. This invoice just goes out every Sunday for my, because my renters are week to week on the midterm. Because once a nurse, once their 13 weeks expire, their first assignment, then the hospital puts them on a week to week basis as long as they need them. And so I'm getting a whole list of midterm referrals that want my unit because other midterm landlords want an actual lease where they're paying by the month. And they're like, I don't know if I'm going to be here a whole month. And if I'm not, and I move on, I have to be able to have my money to pay where I'm moving to. I can't afford to pay a whole month and then wait to try to get a refund. And so they like the fact that after my first 30 days, which is non-refundable, it goes week to week and they can stay as long or as short as their assignment. And I've got a line of people that are like, we want yours because it's week to week. Because what I did when I set up my system, I entered the conversation in their heads instead of them entering the conversation in mine. I'm like, what would make it more appealing to these traveling nurses? And I saw that was the big conflict. But then I also realized that they wanted to end in the middle of a week. And that really, and then the next person always would start on a Sunday. So I would always have this gap. And so what I did realize, and you get clarity as you start putting your programs together, you get more clear how you want to run your business. I decided that Sunday to Sunday was my minimum. So once they start on a Sunday, the whole week is due, even if their assignment ends somewhere in the middle. But it's not, they didn't pay the whole month. They just paid that week. And anyway, that's working really well for me. And I think that's the same with your long-term tenants. I think you have to get your systems in place. And the more that you do everything the same every single time you run a place and you've got your packet together, whether it's electronic or whether it's paper packet, once you get your packet together and you know this is the system, I'm using the same lease with everyone, I'm using the same terms with everyone, I'm using the same checklist with everyone. And once you get into a system, your life will start to get a lot easier because after a while, see, everybody's on the same terms. So then when somebody calls you, you're not like, oh, I got to go read that lease and see what it says. Now you're kind of stuck if you inherit one in a purchase.
Yeah.
But what I do, the first thing I do when I get a new tenant in a purchase, because see, they want to stay and they'll do all kinds of things for you at the beginning. When somebody's coming, they're very agreeable. When somebody's going, they can oftentimes be disagreeable. So when they're coming is when I get them on board. It's your whole onboarding process. So if I buy a property and it comes with a tenant, which is all who is already in a lease, the first thing I do is I type up an amendment to turn their lease into my lease.
Oh,
and have them sign it. And they're like, yeah, I want to stay. Where do I sign? Because they're very agreeable when they're coming. And so now they're still on the same terms as all my other tenants because I amended that lease that I inherited to match all of my other leases.
Okay. I wonder if there's Section 8, what I would have to do for that, if I would have to turn that into Section 8 or what?
Oh, you're saying the lease, since they're already on a lease with Section 8. My guess is Section 8 has some stopping points. They're either on a month-to-month or they're in their first year. And my guess is that you certainly could amend a month-to-month with a 30-day notice, and you could amend the first year at the end of the first year with a 30-day notice.
Okay. It would be up at the end of August.
Yeah, so you're close enough that once you get the lease in your hand, you can see what's different. And it could be that the only thing that's different is that they didn't have that walkthrough checklist of items that you provide, or maybe the due date needs to be adjusted, or maybe the late fees are different than what you like to charge. So I would say that as soon as you see that lease, create your amendment, and then if it's a month-to-month, give them a 30-day notice that you're amending it, or if it's at the end of the year, give a 30-day notice at the end of the year that you're amending it to your terms.
Okay.
That way you're not submitting a whole new lease. You just have an amendment. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I did on my last couple that I inherited. So everybody's on the same terms. The same late fee, the same per day, the same 3-day notice when that comes out. Everybody's on the same terms. So I don't have to like run home and pull a paper file to see. Now, also in Inago, and Tammy, I don't know if you and David are using this, in Inago, if you have a written lease, you can upload it into Inago so that you can see it from anywhere. Do you upload yours, Tammy? Mm-hmm. Okay, your tenant can see it and you can see it, because how many times, you know, the tenant, they don't remember what they did with their copy after they've been there a year or two. And so if you upload it into Inago, they can see it and you can see it.
Most of our leases are actually signed in Inago now.
Yes.
So, you know, most of them are entirely electronic, except for our one tenant that we just haven't been able to get there yet. So he's still hand. We have one tenant that pays by check, and
he won't do anything electronically.
Now, is this one you've inherited in where you live in the back? Okay. Yeah. I get it. And so sometimes you're thinking, all right, I'm not going to rock this boat. Do I really need an empty unit right now? I got to the point with 30 doors, when I got up to 30 doors, that I didn't want even one that I had to, you know, to manage differently. And so I just did a form letter that said, again, I blamed it on the advisory board, you know, it has come to our attention that effective such and such a date, the only way Kathy Benner Companies can receive your rent is through the Inago link. And I got down to, and I gave them a 6-month lead time, and a few rolled over and a few more rolled over. And as we kept getting to my deadline, I had two that still had not rolled over. And I finally, I had to look at myself in the mirror and I had to say, Kathy, are you willing to lose these two tenants? Because if a new one comes on, remember, they're all agreeable when they're coming on. And so if I ousted those two folks and got two new tenants, I would just upfront say, here's how you pay your rent. And they'd say, okay. Right. It wouldn't be an option. And I thought to myself and asked myself, are you ready to lose two tenants? Is that okay with you? And I took a deep breath and said, okay, I'm going to do it. If they don't roll over, I'm going to give them their notice, because they both were on a month to month by this point. And, you know, they'd gotten set in their ways and they're like, nope, not doing it. I'm like, okay, well then maybe you can't live here. So I had to wrap my mind that I was willing to do that. And so finally I thought, okay, this is D-Day. I'm going to call each of them one more time. And the one little fella, I got a hold of him and he said, the reason I haven't rolled over yet is, he said, he was on some kind of a disability. He said, I get a check every month. And he said, and that's what I pay my rent with. He said, and then my mom, out of a whole separate account, pays the difference for me to have my own place. And he said, so the bulk of it, he said, is paid for by my agency. He said, but then a tiny bit of it is paid for by my mom. And he said, and I don't know how to set that up. So it was just, but he never called me to ask. He just was dragging his feet. So I said, okay, I needed to show up with solutions instead of problems. So I said, well, here's a solution. I said, you could open a whole separate checking account. You could deposit your check there or have it deposited there, direct deposit. And your mom then could pay her portion into that and then use that checking account to pay Inago. And he's like, oh, okay. And like within 24 hours, he was on Inago. But that he couldn't in his mind figure out how to get those two payments into one account to pay the Inago. Right. And so, so sometimes it's something that minor. Sometimes they just need a solution.
Our guy says he got burned once by doing some electronic transactions and he refuses to do anything electronic ever again in his life.
Well, he's not going to get far.
Well, and the sad part is that, okay. The sad part is that every transaction he does with a check is an electronic transaction, because as soon as the bank gets it, they turn his check into an electronic transaction. True, and tear up his check. They don't want his check.
But he doesn't have email and he doesn't want to do anything electronic.
I get it.
I don't remember the full story. He told me a little bit more about it. It sounds like he fell prey to a phishing scheme.
Ah.
So he thought he was doing AT&T or something. And then, you know, he put his information and it got stolen. And, you know, I'm listening to him thinking, you were never talking to AT&T. It was not, the legitimate company that caused you the problem. It was, you fell for a shyster.
Well, and that's his way of protecting himself, is he's just going to stay away from all of it so he doesn't accidentally, you know, do something like that in the future. And because my guess is it was a huge, big deal for him to get that all cleared up, whatever that was. And he just does not want to go there again. So I get that. So the only choice you have is to either continue as is, because you know how he feels about it, and then just update that once he moves on. Or at some point, if you get big enough, you know, where you're that one guy out there where you have to handle that separately every single month, and you guys want to be in Tahiti and you're trying to handle this check, you know, at some point you might decide that he needs to move on. He'll either move on because he has decided to, or you might decide for him to. So that's a personal thing, but you know about it. You kind of inherited him. And so I get that. Chris Utter had a lady that she didn't know how to use her cell phone. She didn't know how to even get on Inago. So he would have to help her every month. And he decided it was easier to take a check than to try to walk her through the process every 30 days. So you're going to have some of that. You have to, you know, make those choices.
Well, our goal is to one day be big enough to turn it all over to a management company, and then they can deal with it.
Well, now again,
that's fine. If they don't, fine.
Inago is a nice middle of the road, because, you know, it changed my world when I went over to Inago. I don't receive phone calls. I don't receive cash. I don't receive checks. All my money drops directly into my bank account, and all my maintenance issues come on an Inago request that I simply click the forward button over to whoever is going to handle it. If it's a big plumbing issue, I just forward it on to Pipeworks. If it's a roofing issue, I just forward it on to my roofer. If it's an HVAC issue, I forward it on to my HVAC guy. And then I go to my text and I just text them and say, hey, I just emailed you a maintenance thing. And, Inago, by the time the tenant fills out the Inago maintenance, it's got their name, their phone number, their address, and whether or not they give permission for the person to enter their, it's all there, all right there on Inago. And once I pick that up and forward it, now the maintenance person, whoever I forward it to, has all the same information I have. And then I do have a question, and I don't know, Tammy, if you've used this yet, the comment section on the maintenance where it says all tenants can see the comments. I'm assuming it's just all the tenants to that property. Not all your tenants can see that comment. I would think just the tenants for that property that's checkmarked for that maintenance request could see the comments. And so as soon as a maintenance request comes in, I type there the date and I put maintenance request received. And let's say it comes in at 11 o'clock on the 19th, I would put June 19th, maintenance request received 11 p.m. Then the next morning, say around 8, I might say June 20th, 8 a.m., maintenance request forwarded to maintenance team. And that way, the tenant, they're not saying, did you get my request? Is the maintenance person coming? What's going on? And then if I get a call back from my HVAC or my roofing or whatever, they go, hey, we can get out there Friday. Then I can put right in that comment section of the date and roofing company to arrive such and such a date. And I can keep track of that right there in that comment section, and the tenant can see that as well. So that eliminates all those phone calls.
I do put notices and notes in there. I don't tell them everyone that's received, but when I've contacted a contractor, then I'll put in there, you know, so-and-so to come out on whatever day. And I thought the way it worked was that not all the tenants for all of that, all of the properties, I guess yours are mostly single family, but like for my multifamily, it doesn't notify the upstairs and the downstairs tenant. It just notifies the tenant who submitted the request or the tenant whose name is associated with the request. If I did it.
That's what I thought. And that's my assumption, but I had never really asked the tenants that question to find out. Now, what Chris made a bogus account on Inago, and then he started sending himself all of that stuff to see what it looked like to the tenant. He did that just so he could see what it looked like on the other end. And
you did that too.
Did you? Yeah, I haven't done that. So, but so far I'm loving everything that it does, and all of my leases are loaded in there except my midterm lease. That one still has to get loaded in. But my long-term and my short-term, all of that's in Inago already. And my commercial leases. So bring me up to date with your tenant issue. Michelle dropped off. So I don't know if she got a phone call or something or had to be somewhere, but she dropped off. So tell me about your tenant. How is that turning out?
So David went over there this morning and the boyfriend was there. He's been released from his rehab, I guess.
Okay.
And he was there. So apparently, according to the girlfriend, her restraining order was declined because of his diagnoses. It has something to do with PTSD. He's a war veteran. So
yeah, she was telling me the story. He's a veteran from Desert Storm. So he saw combat. So he got the diagnosis of PTSD and like a personality disorder. And she listed a few other things too. I was like, oh my God, they just opened up the DSM-4 and started checking boxes because it seemed like they gave him everything.
But how does that make him more safe to be there after he's threatened them?
Obviously, I don't think it does either, but as we have discussed before, oftentimes in these situations, I expected that she would allow him back.
Yeah, I wasn't at all surprised either. But you're right, you know, the courts declined are the ones who declined the protection order. So they decided that he's now on, he is on some new meds and he has some diagnosis and they can actually, you know, work towards making the situation healthier. They're actually working towards it. So the courts decide.
Now, is she okay with all that?
She says she's giving him one chance. He knows, you know, one strike and you're out, buddy. This is what she says.
So in other words, he doesn't dare miss his meds, or because if he has a relapse of any kind, she's going to be done with it, which I can get that. But if she can't get a restraining order on him, you know, if he does miss his meds, I mean, she can't make him take his meds.
Right. But she does watch him take his meds every day. So, and not sure, like, if you, to your point, if he were to refuse, I'm not sure what if anything she can do about that. But he's hooked up with several resources now for both counseling and the medications, and he's on a military disability. So my thought was that the judge probably did not want to throw a war vet out on the streets.
Right.
Which is why the protection order got declined. So I told her we could still go forward with the non-renewal and then get a lease signed in just her name. Or at this point, you know, if she wants to just hold off, we can stop, but we're not going to, without the protection order and without taking him off the lease, we're not, the fastest we would be able to do anything is 30 days. Mm-hmm. Fastest we'd be able to keep him out of the building or out of the unit is 30 days. So
she understands. Well, so she now has some tough decisions to make. It's a tough spot that she's in. I get it.
Right.
So
she asked us not to proceed with the 30-day notice at this time. She wants to wait and see what happens.
Well, again, she's got some tough choices to make. I get it, though.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
That's a tough
one. I had one of my stylists one time come to me, and she and her husband had all kind of issues. And she finally, she said, Kathy, what should I do? I said, no one can tell you. I said, you'll know when you've had enough. I said, you won't have to ask anyone. When you've had enough, you'll know. You won't need anyone else's opinion. I said, because that's all it is at this point, is everybody's opinion. I said, that's only a decision you can make. And that wasn't the answer she wanted to hear, but that's, and she, you know, 5 or 6 years later, she did finally file for divorce. And she came around to me and told me, she said, you were exactly right. She said, when I knew I'd had enough, she said, I didn't need anybody to tell me that it was okay to file. She said, I knew that. And she said, now looking back, she said, I probably should have filed sooner, but she said, I just kept hoping that this would work out, that would work. And I told her, I said, yeah, but if you would have filed sooner, I said, then you would have always said, should I have waited? I said, mm-hmm. You would have beat yourself up the other direction, thinking that I do it too soon. Maybe he could have changed or gotten help or whatever. I said, so nobody can answer that for you.
It's a rare person that doesn't second guess their decisions.
Do what now?
It's a rare person that doesn't second guess their decisions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I had a, and maybe you'll pass this on to her. And I had a friend that told me this once, and I've used it so many times. He said, if you have to make a decision and you can't, you know, you're not sure what to do. He said, wait. And he said, and at some point he said, your back will be to the wall where you have to make a decision. And he said, at that point, he said, make the decision with all the information that you have, and then end whatever the stories you tell yourself, end it right there. Because he said, later on, if more information comes to light, and then you go, oh, well, I should have done that instead of this. He said, you didn't have that information at the time. And right. He said, and just know that you made the best decision you could make with the information that you had. And he said, and then just be confident that that was the right thing to do at that time. And call it a day. He said, and you can't go back and rethink it. And that especially helped me when I was taking care of my mom, because she had a brain tumor. And as she was hallucinating and different things going on with her, the doctors would look at me to make some choices. And I had medical power of attorney. And boy, oh boy, especially with a parent, you know, because they've been your parent all your life and they've kind of been there to be, you know, the person helping you along. And all of a sudden now you're going to make some major health decisions for this person. And it was a little scary. And I remember thinking, am I doing the right thing? Is this the right decision? And my friend's voice came back to me, you know, if the doctors are pressing you to make a decision, then you make it with the information you have at the time and call it a day. Now, fast forward many years since then, and I look back, I made a lot of good decisions, you know, with the information that I had. But boy, was it scary at the time, sure. Wondering if I was doing the right thing. So she's got some tough choices ahead, because yeah. My guess is he's not going to have perfect days, and she's just got some tough choices.
Well, right now we have a few screw holes in a door and a door jamb that he said he's gonna fix. So nothing. I mean, they're still paying the rent. There is no major damage to the apartment. There's nothing that that gives us reason to want to throw them out.
Okay.
All we have is, you know, some drama, but this isn't. I don't think what's been asked from us has been anything that's, you know, unreasonable. So
Well, and at this point, if he is on meds and getting some help, it sounds like he has a plan.
Yeah.
Which originally there didn't sound like there was any plan. He was just out of control.
Right. I feel like, though, I'm fine with them staying, but if this becomes a regular thing where there's regularly drama between the two of them that they try to get us involved in, then I will be ready to give a 30-day notice.
Yeah, I see that. Because again, you're trying to grow your business. And so if you had 30 of these, that would be a lot of drama.
Right. And I don't like drama, so.
I don't either. And again, that's why I like that Inago, because all I'm getting, the only option they have on Inago is to pay their rent or send a maintenance request. There's no other options for them to choose from. So they have to call mom if they've got some drama that they need advice on. They don't call me.
Well, speaking of that, the one other thing I did ask her as I was leaving there today was, since she's got the ball rolling and wanting him off the lease and the law exchange and all of that, I asked her to please send us an email or a message through Inago saying that, you know, situation is stabilized. She, you know, no longer wants to move forward with changing the lease or making any other changes like that at this time. Just
that way you'll have it in writing from her.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good plan. Any other questions? Anything else that you want to chat about?
No.
This has been good.
Oh, sorry, I know you can see the look. Dave looks like he's thinking real hard.
Yeah, he's thinking about something.
I thought there was another, I don't know what it is. I thought there was something that I had that I was going to bring up, but it's gone. So
we're going to go call Kyle when we get off of here.
Yep.
Ah, to get your contract back in place.
Get an official contract going.
Yeah.
Good, 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 good. I am in Florida now through the end of the month. And so Kyle is going to be doing the meet and greet on the fourth Thursday. He's going to be doing that one for me on
this Thursday.
23rd. Yep. The 23rd. Yep. So Kyle's going to do that one. And then I will be back on the 30th. So I'll be back up there starting July 1st.
All right.
Well, have fun. Congratulations on your book. Good luck.
Thank you. Yeah, it's out to the editor now. I have no idea till I hear from the editor. It's on a Google Doc, and I just share all of us. It's a collaboration process. There's more than one author, and we just shared all of our manuscripts through a Google Doc. And so you can make comments in the side of a Google Doc. So I'm just waiting for all the red pen, all of the revisions that she recommends and all the circles in the manuscript. I feel like I'm back in high school. I'm going to get graded now. So we'll see how well I did. Anyway, so we're just waiting for all of that to happen. And we're on a pre-sale with iBooks right now for 99 cents. We're trying to get up to 1,000 copies on iBooks. Because the New York Times bestseller says you have to be on two channels in order to be eligible for the New York Times bestseller. So we know once we get on Amazon, because so many people can just with one click can buy something. It's so easy to buy off of Amazon that we know will go pretty quickly. So we're trying to build up the iBooks on with anybody that has an iPhone or an iPad to be our second channel so that we're eligible for the New York Times bestsellers when we finally reach those numbers. So anyhow, our goal is to get 1,000 sold on iBooks, and then we need 1,000 sold on Amazon, but we don't come out on Amazon until September 6th. So it's a process. I think we're at 300 so far on iBooks.
Good progress.
Yeah. Of our 1,000. So anyway, we have until September. All right, guys. Well, it's great you being on today and talking with you. I'm excited about your new purchase. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Keep in touch. And David, if you remember what it was you wanted to ask me, just send me a text.
Will do.
Okay. Bye, guys. Bye.